Hey, this is Rob Motti. I'm in Florida this month, so please enjoy a rebroadcast episode of Faith on the Field Show presented by Cairn University.
Guys, this week our guest is going to be former NFL quarterback Dan Orlovsky. Dan played 12 seasons in the NFL. He played for four teams. He had two stints, though, with the Detroit Lions, and he spent the past training camp with the L.A. Rams. And the L.A. Rams all of a sudden went from being a struggling team to making the playoffs. And maybe we should throw Dan Orlovsky some credit for mentoring Jared Goff, huh?
Maybe. Had a little impact on it. But
You would think. He was there. He spent the whole training camp with him. Should have had some kind of influence,
there you
would
go.
Think.
Well, maybe we'll ask him.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get to that. And Dan retired in September, so we'll talk to him next segment. But what we're going to do today on this show is discuss a topic that really affects everyone. It affects you, affects me, it affects Ryan, it affects Pastor Ka. Everyone out there is affected at some point by rejection.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about rebounding from rejection. And many of us experience rejection more than once, more than twice, more than three times. You can apply for a job that you really want and you don't get it. Or you get fired from a job that you have, or you get cut from a team, whether you're in high school, whether you're in college, whether you're in the pros. And in some guys' cases, they get cut and released numerous times. They get traded. Relationship breakups, that's rejection. Marriage divorces, that's a really difficult kind of rejection to deal with. As kids growing up, sometimes there's a lot of children out there who face rejection from their parents. And even as you grow up and grow older, you still may face that kind of rejection from your parents. If you work in sales, rejection's a daily part.
Yeah,
it's a daily part of your life. And rejection happens no matter who you are. No matter who you are, none of us are immune to rejection. Rich, poor, black, white, whatever you are, race, color, creed, religion, nothing really stands in the way from you getting rejected at some point in your life. And the way we handle it, though, the way we bounce back from rejection, the way we deal with rejection is what's so important, because it can affect the rest of your lives, the way you take that moment and the next few days and the next few months and sometimes the next few years, how you respond to that adversity can just impact you forever. So I think it's very important that we know this as believers, especially to know this. When people are pushing you away, when people push you away, God is pulling you closer. When people say no, God says yes. And he's saying, come to me. He's saying, I got you. I have you. You don't need that job. There's a better one out there for you. You don't need that relationship, that girlfriend who broke up with you, that boyfriend who dumped you, that husband who left you. I have a better person in mind for you. You don't need to go to that university that you were desperately trying to get into to be successful in life. There's a better school for you. Whatever door closes on your life, God's going to open another door. So you can't let rejection destroy you. There's always something better for you out there. If you would just trust and believe in the Lord, he'll show you what it is.
So good, Rob. You know, the truth is, when you say everybody has encountered rejection and God encountered rejection. God encountered rejection in his very first relationship.
How about that?
You know, out of this foundation of love with Adam, his very most precious creation turned around and said, I'd rather have something else. You don't fulfill me. And God was rejected. And I know so often we think, well, God's first reaction to rejection was actually judgment, but it wasn't. Sin required judgment. The holiness of God, the holy aspect of the heavenly court required there to be judgment on Adam and Eve for rejecting God. However, God's response to them was amazing grace. He covers them. He sacrifices. He covers them. Even in his judgment, he gives the very first message of hope when he gives the very first gospel of in talking to the enemy, saying, "Look, I'm going to put enmity between you and the woman, between her child and yours. You're going to strike his heel, but he's going to crush your head." There's hope again. And I love the fact that even in the midst of rejection, God's first response is to bring an environment of grace and an environment of hope.
That's funny you say the first response, because what was just going through my head was everybody responds in a different way.
Absolutely.
Everybody has a different mechanism that they cope with the rejection that they feel. Some people get angry. Some people get depressed. Other people lash out, or they find things that are going to try and soothe them, whether it's drugs, alcohol, social aspects. So, but it's funny that, you know, when you talk about God, his first response, you know, when you think about love and caring, that's not what I face. You know, like how I respond, how I respond to rejection. You know, you feel like you're less than.
Correct.
You know, and a lot of times when you face rejection, you feel like your worth is somehow tied to whatever your goal was.
Absolutely.
And then God has a different plan, and sometimes that's really hard to accept because you can't foresee the future, and so you just feel bad about yourself because this was a closed door or a no from God.
Yeah, I actually think that when you get down to it, rejection actually isn't a moment. It's a voice. And what it does is it speaks something to us about us. We're not worthy. We're not good enough to be on the team. We're not pretty enough to be in that relationship. We're not valued enough to be a friend. And that voice has a longer standing impact in our life than the momentary feeling of losing that opportunity. So Saul, you know, here he is, this amazing king with all these people who are behind him and supporting him. He wins this gigantic battle over the Philistine army that had come in. And this little shepherd boy, right, part of his army, wins the day. His name was David. And then everybody starts singing how Saul has killed his thousands and David has killed his 10,000. And Saul, it wasn't that moment that actually just had power. It was what that moment said to Saul about Saul that caused him for the next decade of his life to live outside of his own calling and throw spears at David and live irrationally and chase this shepherd boy through a desert. You know, you want to talk about rejection. There's rejection on both sides of that. David gets rejected from his boss, Saul. You know, Rob, you know, I love what you said, that there's always another door that opens. However, the door doesn't always open the next day, right? David has to go live in the desert, live in caves, in the middle of, you know, the promised land heat, of the day. So it's a journey.
You got to be patient. You got to be patient with that. And Doug, you alluded to this when you're saying how sometimes that rejection, you become despondent, you become depressed, you can turn to this, you can turn to drugs, you can turn to alcohol. I think the damage from that rejection, it can be the result of misplaced identity.
Correct.
If you're putting your identity on something other than God's word, if your identity is based on what people say about you, if your identity is based on friends, family, anyone else's opinion, that's where you misplace your identity, and that's where the damage from rejection can last longer and linger longer and really have a negative impact on your life, not for a week or two, but for a long period of time, and it can impact more relationships, it can affect your children, and on down the line.
Well, there's a fear that's associated with it, too. Right, so there's personal rejection from a relationship that you may have with somebody, but there's also this fear as a husband, as a father, that if I get rejected from my job or for that promotion that I can't provide, that you're trusting for God to provide that. But there is a rational fear that, hey, I can't pay the mortgage.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be able to pay these bills. I'm not going to be able to afford this. So that fear is real. Mm-hmm. But how do you turn to it? You know, this is a great topic, and it kind of goes with Pastor Phil, who's been with our show for a long time. His sermon on Sunday, Pastor Scott Foreman, who is a friend of our show also, posted this on Facebook, and it's a great little piece that goes with what we're talking about. It says, "Finding personal value or worth in our accomplishments is a rogue way of subtly living by works. A works-based life finds merit in achievement. A grace-based life says all of our achievement is found not in what I do, but in what Jesus did. And I just had this conversation with one of my best friends. He's switching careers, switching jobs, and he found for the longest time, and I don't think you'd have any problem with me sharing this, that he just felt like he wasn't good enough. And when he wasn't good enough in his job, it became his identity. He actually took on, and he was working at Eastern for a time period, he actually took on the failures of the university on his shoulders. And I said to him, I was like, bro, I was like, you really think that where Eastern is right now
is
either because you did or did not do something. And honestly, he really felt that. And I just saw that personal struggle that he put on, just his identity found in his works, in his work that he did, and what people thought about him. And we just had the conversation last night. He goes, I was reading the Bible, which what else can you do? When you get to that point, you need the other voice to come in.
And thus maybe why we go through it.
Yeah, I mean,
to get us to go back to what we should be listening to in the first place. Because rejection has a voice.
Absolutely. And how do we get that voice out of our head? And we find this when we go through troubling times. We find it when we go through difficult situations. How do we get that voice out of our head and fill it with something else? And I promise you, my voice will never be soothing and it will never be the right path. It can only be God's voice in my mind, in my heart, in my body, my soul, that's going to take me out of there. Because if it's left to me, it's going to be a disaster.
We did an episode, episode 16, Finding Your Worth, when we had St. Louis Cardinals three-time All-Star Matt Carpenter on, and we talked about finding your worth in Christ, finding your worth, finding your identity in your relationship with the Lord, as opposed to finding your worth in anything else, whether it's people's opinion, people's judgment of you, your money, how much money you have, what your status is, what your job is, where you live, all that stuff. It's not really relevant at the end of the day. None of it matters. When we come back, we're going to talk to former Detroit Lions, former Houston Texans. He played for Indianapolis, played for Tampa Bay, back for the Detroit Lions. Former NFL quarterback Dan Orlovsky, and we'll get his perspective on how to deal with rejection, because he bounced around the NFL. This wasn't a number one pick who went to a team and stayed there for 18 seasons. Dan had to fight and stayed in the NFL for a dozen years and did a phenomenal job as a backup quarterback. So
you're listening to Faith on a Field Show, presented by Cairn University.
Cairn University is a biblical university located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia. With NCAA Division III athletics, a strong commitment to the arts, and majors in over 40 professional and academic fields, Cairn prepares students to serve Christ as biblically minded, well-educated, and professionally competent men and women of character. Learn more at cairn.edu.
Welcome back to Faith on a Field Show, presented by Cairn University. I'm Rob Motti with Kyle and Doug.
Joining us on the phone is longtime NFL quarterback. He played 12 seasons for the Lions, Texans, Colts, Buccaneers, and then Lions again. Dan Orlovsky, welcome to Faith on a Field Show. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well, Rob. How are you, man?
Hey, we're doing great. Thanks for joining us, and we really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing a few minutes with us. Dan, I want to go back to, I know it's over a dozen years ago, I want to go back to 2006, the season with the Detroit Lions, who were 3-13 on the field at that time that year. But that was the season in September you rededicated your life to Christ. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey, being raised in the church, then going out on your own way, and then being led back to the Lord?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you had mentioned, I kind of went to a traditional church my whole life, a traditional church school, Catholic school my whole life, and I was very much so, you know, when things went good, I was the guy that would, like, pat myself on the back. You know, I went to church just because my parents got me up in the morning, and I had no kind of relationship. And when things went bad, I would, you know, occasionally I'd be like, what's the deal, God? You know, I would blame God a lot. And so kind of through high school and early part of college, really got away from anything that was representative of faith or religion or a relationship with Jesus. I mean, anything. It was just kind of, you know, I was just me, and I was kind of living how I wanted to live with no, you know, I was a good person in the comparison of, you know, holding doors for people and, you know, having manners. I had that, and I thought that was the most important thing. And back into college, still kind of going on that same life process. And then I got into my rookie year in the NFL, which was 2005, and had accomplished kind of everything that I had ever thought I'd ever wanted. All the work that I had done to get making to the NFL and, you know, have popularity and have success and have a lot of money and kind of have girls and whatnot and have the lifestyle that I thought I wanted. I sat back and I was like, wait, this is it? You know, this is everything that I thought was the greatest part of life. And so, you know, I kind of started a little bit of a journey, you know, and started asking questions. And I was so impacted by guys on our team that, you know, a guy like John Kitna or Josh McCown or Mike Furry or our team chaplain, Dave Wilson, each of those guys were so strong in their walks, but walked in a different way. And so, but every time things, you know, every single day I would look at those guys and I'd say, their life is, you know, what it should look like. That's what I want my life to look like, but there's something different about them. So, you know, I kind of went on a little bit journey, started asking a bunch of questions, and I'd hit a Bible study here, a Bible study there, but I didn't want to become a Christian. I didn't want to become a follower of Jesus just because I was a white dude who lived in America. You know, I wanted it to be real. Uh-huh. I wanted it to actually be real to me and believe in it. And so I started looking into all kinds of faith and, you know, researching it and evidence. I'm a skeptic at heart, so I need evidence. And so that kind of led me on my journey, and, you know, through multiple Bible studies and discipleship from John Kitna and spending so much time in the Word and whatnot. It was September, Saturday night before game, the Packers, and we were in chapel, and our team chaplain, Dave Wilson, in the middle of chapel, you know, just kind of stopped his message, and he was like, wait, he's like, God's put something on my heart. I don't normally do this, guys, but he's telling me, you know, there's an opportunity for someone to accept the Lord right now, and I'm going to, you know, present that opportunity for somebody. And I remember, like, thinking to myself, like, looking around in a way and being like, wait, is that me? You know, is this supposed to be me? And in that moment is, you know, when I said the prayer of forgiveness and rededicated my life and my walk with Jesus for sure.
Dan, that was a team that obviously struggled on the field, but you guys, you had more important victories for the kingdom that season. And because it was so early in your career, how did that learning experience, losing on the field but growing spiritually, how did that impact you for the rest of your career?
Oh, man, off the field, you would have thought we were the Super Bowl champions. The growth that we had just the spiritual maturity that grew for a lot of guys. It was a great learning and growing experience for me because I watched these guys say one thing and their actions followed, even in the midst of the darkest days and the most difficult times when it came to their job. You know, when it came to their, I'm not saying that losing in the NFL is the worst experience in the world, but when it comes to what's important to them and what they, you know, truly worked hard at, it was terrible. And I still watched these guys have joy and lead and love their wives and love their children and love their teammates and serve. And that was an eye-opening experience for me. And it had, I mean, I wish I could quantify it into words. It had an incredible impact on me as a player moving forward, as a husband and a dad and a teammate and a person, to watch those guys during those difficult times still, you know, say one thing and have their actions follow.
Dan, we're talking today about rebounding from rejection. And I said earlier in the show, when people push you away, God's pulling you closer. As an NFL player who you've been cut, you've been released, you moved around the league, you experienced rejection, how important was your faith in helping you deal with it and keeping that right perspective through it all?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. You know, I think I was in my sixth year in the NFL, and I was down in Houston, and I had signed as a free agent in Houston, and I was down there for 2 years, and I was going to go into my third year of a three-year contract. And just out of nowhere, very surprisingly to me, the first time I had been cut, I got cut. And I just remember being incredibly emotional about it because it's the first time, you know, and all the thoughts that come into your head, is my career over? Do I stay? All these, you know, thoughts that come into your head. And you know, over a couple of days, I spent a lot of time just being emotional about it. And, I'm having these kind of conversations with God, like, what's going on, you know? And You know, I still, as much as I had great mature people around me when it came to their walk, I was still a little immature, and I was like, wait, I'm walking with you, I'm praying, I'm tithing, you know, how does this happen? And it was funny, I was in my car driving home, and Josh Wilson's song comes on, and one of the lines goes, how in the world do I think I could only get to love you when my life is good? And wow. I mean, it hit me while literally like emotional tears hit me. And you know, it was a great maturity moment for me, or growth moment for me, to be like, wait, you know, this is something that God's allowing to happen, because I've got to understand that loving God is not circumstantial. And it was really important for me to understand that. And then it got to the point where, you know, I worked really, really, really hard in football, and I was really confident in myself in football. And I got to the point when it came to all the things that happened in the NFL where, as long as I worked as hard as I could, and as long as I was doing everything on the football field the right way, I was going to work. It was going to work out for me. And if it didn't, I was at peace with knowing that God probably has something bigger and better, as long as I'm doing my part.
You mentioned, Dan, you mentioned John Kitna, Josh McCown, guys who influenced you positively along the way. As your career unfolded, did you serve as a, or try and serve as a spiritual mentor for younger players? And also, were there other guys besides John who influenced you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had a guy named Mike Furry. So John is a very bold and confrontational and in-your-face guy when it comes to his faith. I mean, it is very black and white, and he wants, you know, if you are going to say, yeah, I'm a follower, it's happening right now for him. And Josh is a little bit more compassionate and understand, not a lack of understanding. I'm not saying that John doesn't have that, but Josh is a little bit more compassionate towards some stuff. He's a little bit more of the pat you on the back encourager. And then Mike Furry, who is a receiver for us, who's actually the head coach at Limestone College now, was just about action. He didn't talk much, but you watched and you learned, and you knew Mike didn't have to tell you what he was against, because you knew what he was about.
That's good.
And those are the guys, you know, besides our team chaplain, Dave Wilson, who poured into my life at an incredible rate. Those are the three guys player wise that are really, really, you know, admired how they went about their walk. And then I absolutely kind of tried to adapt that in my own way. I didn't want to become John Kitna, and I didn't want to become Josh McCown of my prayer. I wanted to be me. And I was super fortunate to have been a part of a bunch of different locker rooms that I could go impact guys. And I was probably a little bit more like a Josh McCown and Mike Furry combo. You know, John's a special, special guy. And so I definitely, it was a very much a focus of mine, that when I went to a locker room, that was kind of like my new, that was my playing field, essentially.
Dan, you know, as you kind of finished up your career, you noted that football had to become your God. And you had this great mm-hmm. quote where you said that the NFL is an incredible organization and an incredible job to have, but it's an even more alluring mistress. So as you kind of come mm-hmm. to the end of your career, and you've come through all those ups and downs, and you've seen God be there, and you've kind of relied on your own success, how did that really come about, and how did you really come to be able to say that?
Well, you know, I think that I had realized, you know, when the end gets near, I mean, I've been playing football since I was 8, so I'm 26 plus years. And when the end gets closer and closer and closer, you grab more and grab more and grab more to the football thing. You don't want it to end, because you have no idea what else is out there. You're right. And it's not a lack of intellect. You just are scared of what else, what's going on. And I was very comfortable with knowing football was what I did, not who I was.
That's good.
But football was really, really important to me. I mean, it got every bit of everything that I had, because that's just how I'm wired. And when the end was coming near, I was struggling with going, you know, dang, football's over. My phone would ring, and I'd run to it to hope it was my agent calling for a team, or,
wow,
you know, I'd text this coach going, hey, and it got to the point where I was, you know, like, Dan, what am I doing? Am I trying to control everything, or am I going to go, okay, I'm going to trust God, because I've trusted him all the way up until this point, you know, and I had realized that football had become this, you know, when you're a kid and you're dating a girl and your phone rings, you cross your finger and hope it's the girl. And that's all you can think about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's what I had gotten to the point where I was my phone ring and crossed my finger because I was hoping it was football. It was the girl, you know, when I was 16. And so I had to come to that point to realize I had slipped and I had let football kind of set the rhythm to my life. You know, I'd wake up, first thing I did was football. And, you know, instead of, okay, am I really getting my time in with God? Am I, you know, staying attached to God? Am I staying close to God? And I had kind of, and I don't know how long I'd let it go, if it was 4 months or, you know, a year, but I had let go of letting God set the rhythm to my life, and I had kind of allowed football to, because I knew football was over, and I didn't want to let go as a player because of, man, just the unknown of what's next. And I think that I had to come to the realization of admitting that to go, okay, I'm okay. It's good. It's over. But I've got other things in my life that are incredibly more important.
You know, Dan, that's so powerful. When, when what we do becomes kind of identified with who we are, and really our identity, that can become troublesome. And you're in this new transition, moving from kind of one season of life to another, being a full-time dad now as well, and all sorts of things. How do you make that transition? How do you continue to move from into this new season and not allow that new season then to become just your identity, but really finding your identity and who God is in that season?
Yeah, it's a challenge because, you know, when you play for a long time, like I said, I'm 34 and I know nothing but football. And that's right. Not a lack of intellect. It's just because I know nothing but football. I've never done anything. All my 34-year-old friends, you know, they studied something in college that was they thought they were going to do. And then they got out of college and got a job. And a lot of them now work in a different field. And some of them work in different branches of that same field. So they've dabbled in three or four different things. And now they've kind of found their comfort zone, their niche. Well, I've never done that.
Yeah.
And so there's that thing of like, okay, well, what am I good at? And so when I got done, it was funny. When I got done, like the first 2 weeks, I remember telling my wife, like, well, I don't need football. You know, I can go get into the business world or whatnot. And my wife would just look at me and kind of laugh. And after those first 2 weeks, I was like, all right, I miss being around the game. I miss talking about it. I miss watching it. I miss, you know, feeling it. And so, you know, I think that's, it's okay to go, okay, no, this is a big deal to me. It's important to me. And, you know, the biggest thing for me is, you know, I'm trying to stay open to, you've got to remind yourself, or at least I have to, I've got to remind myself, well, God brought me to UConn, and for some reason, I don't know, no one knew why I went to UConn, but I went there, and God brought me to Detroit, and I don't know if I would be a believer right now if I didn't go to Detroit, yeah. And he's opened the door for me to be on a bunch of different teams with a bunch of different people that have impacted my life, and I'll be friends with for forever, and I've got to keep, you know, I'm trying to stay with that mindset of, okay, I know what's in my heart. I know what God's put in my heart to do. I know. I'm not going to run from it because of fear. And as long as I work as hard as I can at that, then God will open the door that he wants open. And I just have to listen. Now, that sounds kind of silly at times, but when you've experienced it before, you can understand it a little bit more. You can feel a little bit more. You can see it a little bit easier. So, you know, for me, it's just continuing to be who I am, continuing to trust that, again, like I said, as long as I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and working hard at something that I'm passionate about, then God will either open a door here or open a door there, and I've just got to be willing to walk.
Dan, we look around the NFL, and some of the guys that we know are outspoken in their faith, stand-up, bold Christians. Russell Wilson, Super Bowl-winning quarterback in Philadelphia. You got Carson Wentz, MVP candidate before he was injured. I still think he should be the MVP of the NFL, even though
sure.
he missed the last three games. But these are guys who have a big platform. But at the same time, you don't necessarily need to be a Super Bowl winning quarterback or an MVP candidate quarterback. You could be a backup quarterback who lasted 12 years in the NFL. You could be a third string long snapper. You could be someone else and still share your faith and still impact people. How important is it for players to realize that, and not necessarily just players in the NFL, but for guys in college, guys in high school, guys in Pee Wee League football, to be able to use whatever platform God gave them to share their faith?
Yeah, it's paramount. I mean, I think the biggest thing is this, that if you're not – well, people are always going to watch. No matter what you say, people are going to watch. And it's important for us to, you know, be mindful of that. And that we have – we do, all of us, whether we say we're this or we say we're that, all of us have the opportunity to have impact on somebody somewhere doing something. And more often than not, we can choose if it's important to us or if it doesn't matter to us. And the thing that I, you know, became aware of, and I say to a lot of the young guys that I've been around, you don't just have teammates. You know, there's equipment staff people who are people, who are humans, you know, who have the same experience of life that we do. There's people in the medical, there's team doctors, there's athletic trainers. There's people in the media that you're going to interact with. If you're a college student, there's people on campus. There's kids in your class. There's, again, your equipment staff and your strength staff. All those people that aren't just your teammates, but they are in the bigger picture, they're all watching, and you have the opportunity to impact them, even the high school kids. You know, especially with social media now. And I have 6-year-old triplet sons. And I always tell
God bless
son,
you.
Even at six right now, and I know they don't understand it, but I always tell them what you do and what you say matters. And I'm trying, you know, that's even more so for athletes who we live in an entertainment-driven society, right? And sports is such a big deal to America, and football is such a big deal to America. And you can either run from that aspect and that truth, or you can run to it and kind of use it for something that's really cool, right? And so it's just the biggest thing is educating everybody on being cognizant of, okay, like, you know, this – you know, I believe that the NFL is a full-time privilege. It's a privilege, and it's incredibly hard work, and you've got to catch some breaks, and the work is incredible. But it's a privilege, and if you're willing to accept that privilege, there's also situations that come from accepting that privilege, and one of them is having eyes on you all the time, and you've got to be aware of that.
That is Dan Orlovsky. Dan, thank you so much for the conversation. Real powerful insight. We really appreciate it. Former NFL quarterback sharing 20 minutes with us about his faith. And Dan, we wish you tons of blessings as you pursue the next stage, the next chapter of your life and of your career. Thank you so much for being our guest on Faith on the Field show.
Thank you guys for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Take care. And Dan Orlovsky, man, that was powerful.
That was great.
Huh? That was really good stuff.
Yeah.
And we'll go to a break right now, guys. When we come back, we can talk a little bit about that. And I want to get into a story about rejection, personal story, that something I experienced last week. And we try and be as transparent as possible here on Faith on the Field show so we can relate to everybody out there. And I want to get into that and see if maybe that can help somebody else who can deal with something, with some kind of rejection that they faced maybe today, yesterday, tomorrow, or you will coming up in the future.
You're listening to Faith on a Field show presented by Cairn University.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Cairn University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Cairn is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Cairn is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at cairn.edu/visit.
Welcome back to Faith on a Field show presented by Cairn University. I'm Rob Motti with Kyle and Doug.
We're in week 38, episode 38. If you've missed any of our previous episodes,
wow,
this is the time. Grab your phones, catch up on iTunes, subscribe to Faith on a Field, download them, listen at your convenience. You can also follow us online at faithonthefieldshow.com. You can like our Facebook page. We're on Instagram. We're on any form of social media out there, right, Doug?
Everything? We are, yeah.
Is there anything we're missing? We're
maybe
not on
Snapchat,
LinkedIn.
Some of the new ones. We are on LinkedIn. Well, we're personally on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
but, you know,
so, but you got us on Twitter. You got us on Facebook. You got us on Instagram. More importantly, go to iTunes, subscribe to Faith on the Field, download and listen. We've had some impressive guests on our show. But what we do each week, it's beyond just having an impressive name and an impressive guest. It's talking about, today we're talking about rebounding from rejection. And each week we try and bring in a topic that can be relatable, that can help you in your daily struggles and in your walk and your journey to uplift, encourage, inspire, motivate. Just thinking back, episode 31 was one of my personal favorites. It was Thankful Through the Storm, and we had Chris Maragos on, and we talked about overcoming adversity. So if you're going through anything difficult like that, go back and check that out, episode 31. Episode 7, early on, we talked about keeping your cool, and we had Curtis Granderson on, and former New York Met, L.A. Dodger, New York Yankee, Detroit Tiger. Mm-hmm. We talked about whether you're a competitive athlete or whatever you're doing, always trying to maintain your testimony in how you act. So there's so many topics out there that we've discussed that can help you in your journey, that help us in our journey, and some excellent insight from so many athletes. So make sure you check it out.
You know what's always good, too, is you can give it to a friend that kind of is going through something.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to a buddy. He was out in Iowa, Pastor Jack Close, and we were just talking to guys about challenging them to make more of church. Yeah. Right. And so I referred him back to our interview with Adam Wainwright. You know, when he talked about, hey, I went to church my whole life, but I didn't really find that relationship with Christ until later on. So hopefully, you know, God's provided some episodes where you can share it out and give somebody a little help when they need it.
That's what Dan just said as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, guys, we're talking about rebounding from rejection, right? And bouncing back. And you know, I said, when God pulls you, when people push you away, God's pulling you closer. And there's always another door. There's always something better. Yeah. But it's one thing for me to say that. For me to act it, to live it out, to deal with it. And I want to go back to an encounter I had last week that kind of changed had me down for a couple days. And I'm working on this big-time project. I'm trying to write a story with some video, interviewing some players about their faith, and just trying to do it right, do a big deal out of it, and really give them that platform and share it out there. And one of the players who I was going to have be part of it, at last minute said I'm out. I don't want to be part of it. And it surprised me because it was someone who I considered like the last person to not want to be involved. Mm-hmm. But I'm not. You know, I never push. If you say no. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine with me. Everyone's going through something at that moment. Maybe there's other reasons. There's extenuating circumstances. I don't know what it is. And I guess maybe he saw the baffled look on my face, so he felt like explaining, and he said, there's been a bunch of stories like this done, and I don't want to flood the market. And it kind of like made me take a step back. And I said, okay. And I walked away, and I started thinking. I'm like, yeah, but we can't flood the market. We can't. There's not too much Jesus, right? You can never flood the market with too many stories about this. And I walked out of that, even though I did interview several other guys and got what I needed. I texted you, Doug, and I was like, man, this happened. And if one guy who you know, I felt like I knew and could be part of this feels that way, maybe he's right. Maybe I'm doing something like maybe it ran its course. Maybe there's no more to go here. If I can't get my guy on board, right?
Right.
Well, maybe, you know, I was in a bad place for a couple of days, and you know, Doug, you're encouraging me like, hey man, you know, there's other players, and you know, we've had this long list of guys we've interviewed, and I told Bree about it, and she said, keep doing what you're doing, because God knows your heart, and he'll lead you to the right people. And it took me a couple days, and I think part of it was the weather was terrible, and it was snowing, and I'm sick, and I'm inside, and I'm just going back to
the
every
conversation. In your head. The voice is
I'm
just
going
in
back
head.
To every conversation I had, and I'm like, well, you know, is it me? Like, did I do something wrong here, or is it? he just was having a bad moment or just didn't want to be involved. But ultimately, I knew I couldn't let this one moment, this one person, this one decision, I couldn't let that affect what I'm trying to do here. And this is something that we have worked on for so long and put together and overcome all these obstacles. And God has led us to this path. I wasn't going to let that destroy me. But I'll be honest with you guys. I'm not a rejection guy. I'm not a guy who likes. I don't like rejection.
Let's be real. None of us are.
I know.
Right. Sure. I mean, we're pretty sensitive guys, I would think, too.
Yeah.
But listen, I think you would handle rejection if you were doing a story and somebody just rejected you as a reporter for your story. You set up an interview. I mean, you've gotten told no before. Like, that's not a big issue. But,
yeah.
But when your heart is there to do something for Christ, for the show, and you feel like not only is he rejecting you, but he's also rejecting you doing something for God that you thought he was on board before, that was crushing.
That's what I don't get.
That's what it was.
That's what it was. Because if it's just an interview for a sports story, I've had guys blow you off constantly.
Yeah,
it happens all the time. And you know what? I never take offense to that because if I put myself in the place of an athlete, I would have a difficult time talking to the cynical media.
Well, they can't say yes all the time,
right? They can't.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, exactly.
They can't. So I totally get that. But when you...
You set it up.
Yeah.
When you had good intentions about it. You thought you were doing the right thing.
You were excited.
Thing.
Yeah.
I think
I would say two things in that, because, Rob, it happens all the time. I'm so with you on so many different levels, hey. But and I think this goes straight across the board. I think when we look... we can't allow someone else to steward our dream and or someone else to hold our peace in the midst of our dream. You know, Joseph shares his dream with his family, the people who should be the most supportive of him, the ones who should want him to be able to be the most. And obviously we know that the end of that story, and all through that story, the ups, the downs, the slavery, the false accusations, the prison, the being forgotten, and all those kind of things. We love the end of the story where he becomes, you know, the second most powerful man in the world. But, you know, the reason why he could do that is because he didn't allow someone else to hold his peace. Only God held his peace. He wasn't asking anyone else to be responsible or steward the dream. God gave him the dream. All right, God, whether my brothers want to be a part of it or not, whether my dad wants to be a part of it or not, whether my aunt wants to be a part of it or not, whether my best friend wants to be a part of it or not. And those things are hard because our hearts are there, our friendships are there, our connections are there. There's people we've done life with. But this is really where it gets down to it. Did God give them that dream, or did he give you that dream? Did God ask them to steward that call, or us to steward that call? Is he the keeper of our peace, or are we allowing someone else to hold our peace? And that happens all the time. I've told you guys, and I say this all the time at church and wrote a book about it, but my biggest mistakes in life didn't come because of ignorance. They came out of insecurity. I knew better. Mm-hmm. It's the fear of being rejected. It's the wanting to be accepted. It's the needing someone else's approval. And I know in our own way, we'll go, I don't need anyone else's approval. That's such machoism.
Yeah.
It's such false bravado.
It's a straight lie.
It's absolutely right. And the danger, the danger is when someone else holds your peace, the danger is this. After we get rejected, and we all will, we will live our lives to prove them wrong. I'm going to show my dad wrong. I'm going to prove that teacher wrong. I'm going to prove that person wrong. I'm going to prove that fiance who rejected me wrong. I'm going to that spouse who left me wrong. I'm going to prove them wrong. And in living a life to prove them wrong, we actually miss the destiny that God called us to live right.
I think that's so important to remember that. Say that part again.
Yeah, I think when we live so hard to actually prove someone else wrong, we miss the destiny that God has for us to live right. And so at the end of the day, you know, inside, we're never going to prove them wrong anyway, because they're actually not looking. They're not sitting back. I think that's the thing that we go. When someone hurts us, we're always sitting back going, oh, if I get healthy, if I do good, they're really going to be sorry. And they're like, they're not even thinking about you. You're thinking about them.
Yeah.
Not thinking about you.
Tell us about that book, Pastor Kyle, Exposing Insecurity. When did you write this book?
I wrote it a few years ago. It's, you know, to be honest, it's just kind of a journey of my own and going through scripture and looking at things like insecurity will make you do things you swore you'd never do. You know, Cain didn't get up in the morning and think, you know what, I'm going to kill my brother today. But because he felt rejected by God. Because he felt less than, because of, so in his mind, he was a failure because his brother got something he didn't. Insecurity let him do something he didn't want to do. You know, insecurity has a voice that directs our path. You know, like I said, Saul is one of those great examples. You know, he was listening to what other people said. And in that process, he tried to destroy what God had for him in his life. And I think so often we can allow those things. You know, the old lie, Rob, is this. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Bro, I've had broken hands, broken ribs, bro, and they've all healed. Some of the hardest things for me are still the negative things that someone else has said about me, even maybe worse, the things that I've said about myself. Because that's what rejection does. It continues having a voice, not only of what someone else says, but then what I actually begin to say over myself, which becomes so damning in my own life.
All that's going through my head as you're saying this is I'm thinking about my kids and I'm thinking about my wife. Right. Yeah. And so looking through your book here real quick, first of all, this is a quote machine. So if you don't even need to read the book. You can just scroll through here and look at the quotes.
They got
right?
A little quote so box there.
It does
got
a little quote box.
Why read that one right there? It's just calling to me. Right, that
insecurity
one.
Will create that woe is me, you owe me attitude. It's and true. Then the title is insecurity will always promote self-pity. And so what I'm thinking about is if I'm so worried about my own self-pity, my own issue, my daughter's going to come to me with an issue where she needs reassurance.
Correct.
I'm going to give her a quick word. I'm going to give her a quick response or maybe even a rejection at that point, which then may break her bones, right? I mean,
Absolutely,
break her down. And so for me, I'm just like, oh, I was busy. I was doing something, and all of a sudden she came to me. But that was a time where she needed me. And when we get so focused on ourselves, we can't think of anybody else.
You cannot live fully in the moment of impartation when your mind is still focused on rejection. So in those moments when you're supposed to impart to your girl, your kids, your wife, your friends, when your mind is still connected to rejection, we'll always miss living fully in the moment of impartation.
I'm just going to keep banging out quotes. We can only make ourselves feel inferior when we give into the insecurity of comparison.
Absolutely.
So we're always worried about comparing ourselves to somebody else or not living up to somebody else. We're missing gratifying somebody else. Right, we're missing the blessing we can be to somebody else.
Absolutely.
Right?
Look, so, you know, David.
It's a good book. We got to get that on Amazon,
Yeah,
so I mean, like,
yeah,
I'm not
Kindle. Yeah,
Amazon.com. There
yeah.
you go.
Yep.
That is really powerful. That one, I love that. We can only make ourselves feel inferior when we give in to the insecurity of comparison. Because when you look at social media, you hear this all the time, if mm-hmm. people's lives were only half as good as they pretend to
Rob.
Be on Facebook,
absolutely right.
Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be great.
I wish everyone was as happy as they pretend to be or look as great as their filter makes them look. And it would be awesome. But I genuinely feel bad, genuinely feel compassion because you know there are people out there, you know, there are, and you could see it in your relationships and in your family and in friends, and you know who's living for trying to impress people, and those are the ones a lot of times where I just want to like reach through my screen on Facebook and shake them and be like, the peace you need is in Jesus. That's it. You don't need that
fleeting.
Peace.
Yeah.
And the peace is right there in Christ.
Yeah.
If you had that peace of knowing that Jesus is your Lord and Savior, you don't need anything else.
Well, think about this too. And you have a large following on Facebook. Remy has a large following on Facebook, right? You can have a post or some sort of, you know, something on Instagram, whatever, and you can get 100 likes. You can have all these compliments, and you're going to have that one negative.
Oh, yeah.
Point on there, and that's one, right? It's going to take that one negative comment that's going to blow 100 good compliments out of the water.
Bro,
right?
You know, you can
and nobody's
preach
immune
at conferences
to that. Nobody's
with
immune to that,
thousands
right?
of people, and you know, you see people come to Jesus, and then one person meets you in the lobby and says, "I didn't like what you said. I disagree. I don't like." And,
I don't like the sweater you're wearing,
that's
Pastor
all
Kyle.
That's
why do you always dress
about?
That way,
people
Pastor
do
Kyle?
Do that
right?
to
so,
a pastor?
Oh my gosh, all the
come
time. But
on.
But I will tell you, Rob. You know, it's funny because we all live in the shadow of comparison. We just do. Especially, I think, even more so in the social media age. It's why the Bible talks very ardently about make sure you guard your heart. It's not for God to guard your heart. It's for us to guard our heart and make sure. Because, you know, one of the first questions I get all the time when I go to a pastor's conference, all the time, how many people go to your church? It's the first question most people ask me.
It's like how many likes you have on Facebook,
it's
right?
like your identity is measured
have, right?
in how many.
But what happens is, like, even myself, I can't tell you how we joke about pastor numbers because pastor numbers are never real. They're never real.
How do you answer that question?
He's got a good answer for you. You know he does.
It's always a struggle. You know, I usually don't talk about the number of people that come to our church. I usually just
you say
talk
which
about,
campus do you want to talk
I just
about?
Talk is about, hey, look, you know, our church is doing really well. God's doing stuff. And, you know, what I try to talk about is people. I want to tell the story of people. Because, Rob, what that does is it gets back to something we said earlier. If I take too much blame when it's going bad, my wife tells me this all the time. She really helped me in this. So shout out to my wife, Danielle. She said, look, Kyle, if you take too much blame when it's going bad, you'll take too much credit when it's going good.
It's like a quarterback.
Exactly.
Always
right.
getting credit
Always,
when they win, absolutely getting right. when they lose, and it's
and that's an internal thing. That's sure. us looking at it and going, oh my gosh, I'm a bad dad, that's what I'm saying. It's not just a pastor thing or an athlete thing. It's everybody. We all look at other people and go, but we don't know their story. We look at them, oh, I wish I could be that kind of dad. I'm just not a good husband. I'm not a good work. And so often the comparisons are not real. That's why we shouldn't live in comparison to anyone else but Jesus. How do I line up with who he created me to be? Am I living in that, the fullness of that measure? And if not, how can I take one more step towards being that kind of man or woman with God?
Let me ask you a question, Kyle, because as an athlete, as a quarterback, there's stats, right? And so they're even putting numbers on everything, and they're comparing you to other quarterbacks,
yeah.
your record for your team.
Passer rating.
So absolutely. Yeah. It's a fun part, but you're just made to be compared to everybody else, yeah. and you're ranked,
yes.
right? Being a quarterback for so long and playing football, what was harder, the rejection that you faced or the need for approval that you faced as an athlete, or what you faced when you were a pastor?
The hardest thing is that journey as a man, because that's actually where both of those things collide.
Mm.
There are things that were created in me. Danielle and I talk about this a lot. You know, being a quarterback in particular, you're the center of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Even off the field, you're the center of it all. You're where the party is. You're where the team hangs out. I never went places. People always came to my house, my apartment, my. So even in that, it breeds inside of you a sense of selfishness you don't mm-hmm. even know. Entitlement, all of those kind of things. I think that there's an expectation that's unhealthy that people have of pastors that aren't real, because the Lord is my pastor. That's what the Bible says. But we're always looking for someone else to be that answer. So there's a wrong sense of expectation, I think, which is a show maybe for down the road. But I think in me, buddy, they did different things. When we planted church and church took off and was doing great, I got that same ego,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh, okay. just in the Christian world. And I just mm-hmm. kind of say, and it was always, well, God was doing it. No, but I took too much credit. And then when we hit hard times, I took too much blame.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to get out of it. I have to own what's mine, but actually depend on him.
And for those who don't know, Pastor Kyle was Pastor Kyle paved the way for Peyton Manning to go to Tennessee. Because you were there at Tennessee. What year was that? What year were you at?
86, 87, 88. Yeah,
86, 87, 88. Yeah. And the churches that he pastors, and we always fail to say this every week, is Connect Church in Cherry Hill, Philadelphia, and Randolph. Thank you to all of our listeners and followers. Huge thank you to Pastor Scott Foreman for all of his excellent work on our website, podcast, blog, and all that he does to make us present better. Thanks to Jim Henderson for all his work behind the scenes. Thank you to our wives. Thank you to Ryan Lennox for producing the show. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Big thanks to 610 ESPN Philly, 107.5 Alive, and Joy FM Sports for airing Faith on the Field show presented by Kearney University. For the crew here, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference. Be a blessing.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Kearney University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Kearney is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Kearney is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at kearney.edu/visit.